Hey, Marvel Maniacs, welcome to another exciting episode of Guardians of the MCU. This is episode number 183, and we are recording this on Tuesday, September 7th, 2021. John, what network is Guardians of the MCU part of?
It would be part of the greatest podcast network ever, Random Chatter.
Fantastic. And Sheba, where can people find more information on the network?
randomchatter.com.
Fantastic. Those are exactly the right answers I was looking for. Completely unrehearsed improv folks. And to their credit, they didn't screw it up. So
I was really worried I would.
That, you know what? And the thing is, that's okay, because I screwed up like the first 3 seconds of the intro and decided to start over. So yeah, randomchatter.com for information on all of our shows, membership through Patreon, access to the Escape Hatch Discord channel, and show merchandise from TeePublic. Kind of a slow news week, which is not to be unexpected, because we had a movie release. You know, Marvel Studios wants us to focus on that movie. We are going to talk a little bit about that movie. No spoilers, however, in this episode. But if you go to Guardians of the MCU episode number 182, the one that released just before this, for those of you who aren't good with numbers, that is a spoiler-filled review done by none other than Sheba and Lizzie. Yes, the missing Elizabeth. She's been found. Sheba was able to wrangle her up. The two of them did brave the theaters in their areas, and they went to see Shang-Chi, and they both loved it and gave a full big spoiler-filled review, which I managed to edit without spoiling myself, and I'm really proud of that.
That is so very impressive.
John and I have yet to see it. Maybe I might try going into like an early matinee next week to catch like an empty theater or something. We'll see.
Lizzie was saying the closed captioning theaters, those are usually pretty empty. Mm. So if you want to check that out, see if that might fare better if you're deciding to go.
And you know what? I actually don't mind that, because that's how I watch a lot of shows anyway.
Because, that's exactly what I was telling Lizzie.
Yeah, because sometimes with like background noises or whatever, sometimes just simply inflections of people's voices and whatnot, it's hard to catch. Sometimes you miss a name or something that they said. So I certainly wouldn't mind that. John, do you have any particular viewing plans for Shang-Chi? Are you going to wait for Disney Plus? What are you doing?
Well, first, let me go back to the closed captioning, because while I do watch a lot of shows that way, the thought of watching a movie that way seems, I don't know why, and I think it's just because I'd have to move my head while I tried to read the words. So I'm like, no. Do I have to see it? Tim, like you, the trying to sneak in to see it would be nice.
Wait a minute. Just to contextualize, I am not trying to sneak into a theater. Okay. I'm actually going to pay for a ticket.
Okay, pay for a ticket at a non-primary.
I was about to get angry. To
see the movie. I think work-wise, just because in the new job, Hurricane is busy season, I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see.
That's fair. That's totally fair. Okay. So, folks, I think with that, we will get on to our news. So speaking of Shang-Chi, this is, you know, like I said, we're going to talk a little bit about this, this movie in a very non-spoiler fashion, because first of all, we're going to talk about money. This movie had an incredible box office opening. This is the largest box office opening of any film during the pandemic. Just to kind of further contextualize things a little bit, the record prior to this past weekend in the box office was held by the Halloween movie that came out in 2017. That movie made $30 million, which is not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Like in the grand box office scheme of things. Mm-hmm. And really to think about this, like apparently like no big movies ever really came out on Labor Day weekend. I think the assumption is everyone was going to be out partying, you know, the last hurrah of summer, et cetera, et cetera. So they never put movies out in the theater then, or big ones. Mm-hmm. So $30 million. Starting. What's up?
School usually starts around that time too. So I guess people are like,
yeah,
do last minute family things, I guess.
Yeah.
Final beach weekend.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Who the heck is going to go see a movie? Clearly, mm-hmm. people who want to see one, a Marvel movie, and two, mm-hmm. who have been craving the experience of getting out to theaters. So, okay. Halloween 2017, $30 million over the long weekend. Shang-Chi, opening day, made $29 million. Over the four-day weekend, this is Friday through Monday, almost $90 million.
Yay.
That is a legit competitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if this were non-pandemic times when John and I and a whole gazillion other people would have gone to see this movie on opening weekend, this thing would have made some serious, serious money. It mm-hmm. would have been a competitor, probably would have been in the top, I don't know, maybe 3-4 MCU movies.
Yeah.
That's pretty significant.
I will say when I saw the numbers come in, I was shocked and really pleased, because hopefully that also means, you know, theaters coming back, people more comfortable getting out, as well as some of the naysayers against this movie. So mm-hmm. it was very nice to see.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing is hopefully there'll be more, you know, it just also shows like, hey, look, more diversity. It does make money. That kind of thing is always a good draw as well.
Taking a look live right now at Rotten Tomatoes, the tomato meter, which is their slate of 250 some odd, quote, professional reviewers, is sitting at 93%.
Yay.
And for those who aren't familiar with how the tomato meter works, it's either they like it or they don't. They're not actually, the individuals aren't giving a percentage. They're simply saying, I like it or I don't like it. So 93% of these reviewers like it. The audience score is even higher. The audience score is sitting at 98%. And it has been that high like ever since the movie came out. It's been sitting, I think, at like 98, 99. So that's pretty freaking fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
I'm very happy for everyone involved in the movie.
So very timing of it coming out, and I'm not surprised at it, but Awkwafina was interviewed by Dax Shepard, and they released it maybe Friday, maybe today. And she what you were talking about with diversity, she spends a lot of time talking about that and what it meant to her growing up and what it means for her to kind of be that role model for that community. And I mean, she even talks about being a comedian, and she's like, there were no comedians that looked like me. There were, you know, it wasn't there. And she's like, you know, my generation, if you didn't watch, you know, Jackie Chan or Bruce Lee, you didn't really have that. And she's like, it is fantastic to be part of something that's going to be that next generation that people talk about. And this, she was saying all this before the success of the movie, you know, kind of announced, and her just kind of knowing and quite honestly saying doesn't matter to her. They made a movie and it's coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she is just so damn funny. I absolutely loved her in Crazy Rich Asians.
Mm-hmm.
So funny. I know that also they did Nora from Queens, which mm-hmm. I haven't yet seen, but I do want to see that. She's just really freaking funny. So let's see what else about Shang-Chi. Kevin Feige and the director, Daniel Destin Cretton, said there are already story ideas on the plate for the next Shang-Chi solo film, which they are not confirming that it's going to happen. But when we take a look at the pattern of mm-hmm. MCU movies, basically everyone except Hulk has gotten two, quote, solo movies. So, yeah. So especially given they had mentioned not only given the box office response that Shang-Chi has gotten, but also because of the fan response to a lot of the supporting characters like Awkwafina's character and others. Mm-hmm. So they have clearly done something really, really good there.
Yeah.
I'm positive that they have. I haven't seen it yet, but by all accounts, they definitely have.
Yeah.
Let's see. What do we have next year? Oh, so the Russo brothers were apparently in negotiations with Marvel Studios to do another MCU production. Mm-hmm. With news of the Scarlett Johansson lawsuit, they took a step back. And they said, hey, we don't know if we really want to work with you guys again, if this is the way that you're going to be treating talent.
Good. Good for them.
Yep. I'm glad they actually said, because I think they had some, I think at one point they had said they were disappointed, but they hadn't actually made like a formal thing, I guess. So yeah. It's good to know that they're actually, you know, saying something by their actions.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I completely agree. And we've talked about this whole lawsuit for a long time. And I think really the big thing here is that and it's not really Marvel Studios, it's Disney. Disney mm-hmm. needs to wake up to what the current reality is and make sure that people are getting paid for distribution, whatever that distribution may be. That's mm-hmm. all. Bassam Tariq, the director of Blade, is saying that his film isn't going to be beholden to comic canon. Now, I will say in his quote here, he kind of throws the word canon around like it actually means something in comics. Because it doesn't. I mean, we all know that they reboot stories yeah. and, you know, change things all the time. But the essence of what he's saying here is basically that he's going to do a story that I think is not necessarily following any particular storyline from the comics that already exists. His quote here is, what's so great is it's not as boxed in as I think people imagine it to be, which I thought it was. But it's quite exciting. And I think the reality is there is no Blade canon. In some comics, his name is Fred H. Blade instead of Eric Brooks. Unfortunately, the runs never lasted that long, and there have been some interesting and exciting waves, but I can say the new movie is going to be character first. Thoughts?
I think that's pretty cool. I mean, we know that the MCU has done that with a lot of its characters, taken some parts of it and kind of changed things around a little bit. And for the most part, it really works. As long as like the essence or the who the character kind of is doesn't really change. Yeah. I think any other changes that they make is fine. You know, like I'd be okay with it. I know that a lot of other changes that they've made have worked. So I am not surprised by that. And definitely looking forward to seeing what Bassam Tariq comes up with.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even look at like major events like, you know, the Infinity Gauntlet, Civil War, they take elements of canon. Some they stick to more than others. Some they very much switch around. So to a degree, I'm actually relieved that he feels that way and he can have that creative license, because I think it adds more to the screen when they can do that. I don't want to see just a remake of a comic. I'd actually be surprised if more surprised if it was the opposite. And he's like, yeah, they gave me, you know, this 6-run series and said, make this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, it is interesting and also unfortunate, as he points out, that while Blade has a considerable history, I mean, he first appeared in, I think, like the mid-70s in like the Dracula comic book, I think. So the character has been around for decades and has been incredibly underutilized. Generally does happen to pop up in the more, you know, mystical, arcane types of comics. So like, you know, Doctor Strange and Ghost Rider and those kinds of titles. The movies that were done before Wesley Snipes definitely gave the character a lot more exposure. The first movie was really good. The second one, less so. The third one doesn't exist to me. but that's usually how most of these things end up going. But you know, I thought the first movie was actually really good, and there's been a lot of basically continued talk about like how they are not intending to disrespect what Wesley Snipes did with the character, because he really did do some good stuff with the character. I mean, that was by all accounts a pretty awesome movie. You guys have seen the movie, I assume?
Yeah. And I know a lot of people who maybe weren't the biggest Marvel fans to begin with, that is probably one of their favorite movies. And even before the MCU kind of took off, everyone was like, no, that was the best MCU movie that they could, or the best Marvel movie that they could think of, or best superhero movie or comic book related movie that they could think of.
Sure.
So yeah, it definitely is one of the good ones out there. And Wesley Snipes deserves the respect that he put into that character. It would be kind of nice to, you know, if they paid some kind of, he had some little cameo or something, you know, pop up somewhere.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they might do that, but you know, who knows? That's just maybe just me being, you know, optimistic about it. But it would be really kind of fun to see him pop in somewhere, whether it's in the Blade movie or in some other like random, like, you know, maybe in Doctor Strange being like, look, multiverse, hello.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows?
John, did you see it?
I did. And I don't want anyone involved in the new movie to take this the wrong way. It's really easy to make a Blade movie today. When Wesley Snipes, I mean, because Marvel's huge. You can take a character like Blade. You can take a character like Shang-Chi. And people are going to, you're going to get more of an uptick to see it because it's Marvel.
Sure.
And because of what they are known for at the theater. When Wesley Snipes and that cast and crew made those movies, comic book movies were not a thing. And I think most people viewed it more of it as a vampire movie than a comic book movie.
Yeah.
And then finding out that it was tied to a comics, but comics were still nerdy back then. Only dorks read comics.
Yeah. Yeah. John, you dork.
I say that and I wear that badge with pride. So a different timeline. Sheba, I would love to see Snipes make some level of cameo or, you know, kind of connection to it. I think that would be great to kind of connect those two with it. You know, it, to me, I think these are going to be it's like the Tom Holland Spider-Man and the Tobey Maguire. I view them not as remakes. I really view them as whole separate not genres, but like, but movies in and of itself. And I think that will be this one too. Will they probably pay some homage? Yes, that'll be great. Otherwise, I am super critical when it comes to vampires and movies. Do not get me started on Twilight and the fact that there was enough vampire movies.
Oh yeah, we don't talk about those movies or the books for that matter.
Yeah, don't. Blade is one that as a vampire, I'm like, yeah, I want to see this one. I like this one.
Yeah. Jonathan Schwartz, who's the producer for Shang-Chi, he gave a little bit of an explanation in one of his interviews. Yes.
Tim, is the Schwartz strong in him?
Probably. I would assume so, yes. Because obviously everyone associated with the film has been doing interviews. He did an interview, I think it was with comicbook.com, and he gave some explanation about how MCU stories are actually selected for Disney Plus versus going into theaters. He said, it's something we've all figured out together. What makes sense for Disney Plus? What makes sense for movies? What characters go where? We figure it out as a group. I think that's what's cool about Disney Plus, is it gives us the opportunity to tell stories that are maybe outside of the norm of what we would be able to do in movies, that want a different canvas, that want a different structure, that are maybe a little weirder and wilder than what would have typically in the past been able to go in movies. Now I think the movies are able to do things we may not have been able to do in the past, because the shows have given us the confidence to do it. Everything wants to push the envelope more because the audience is getting used to a different level of storytelling. The thing that I appreciate here is the level that they include the producers in this. It kind of feels that there is like this, you know, circle. And we've talked before that there is kind of this group within Marvel Studios that does a lot of these determinations. And it seems that like producers are part of that circle as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I like that they kind of explained a little bit about which ones go to like our actual movie and then while the other ones go to Disney Plus kind of thing, or at least trying to give us an explanation for it a little bit. Because sometimes I wonder that. I'm like, how did this one go to Disney Plus and how did this one go into a movie? Why did it start here than the other place? But it is nice that you get to have another medium to tell the stories in the way that, like you said, in the way that they want to kind of thing. And maybe divulge into it a little further. Like, for example, like with the Ms. Marvel show, because that's the one that I'm really excited about, but also really nervous about. It's interesting that had they put her in a movie, they might not have been able to, you know, maybe talk more about her Pakistani heritage or background. But in the show, they might be able to do that or showcase that a little bit more because it allows for longer and more detailed character development, I guess, or just, you know, being able to see those things.
And I suspect that that is one of the big differences that in their discussions, they say, hey, you know, this is going to have or this warrants a lot more story. Therefore, it should go to Disney Plus. So it's longer form. It's episodic. This thing is going to be shorter and heavy in action. You know, let's put that in a movie. And
it comes down to, can they tell the story in 2.5 hours or do they need 6?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we, you know, they didn't divulge what it was that they were talking about with the Russo brothers in terms of what their production was going to be. But the roots of the Russo brothers are in episodic storytelling, which is also why they did so well, why they have done so well in the MCU, because the movies that they did were all linked together, basically like episodes, just really, really long episodes. I'd love to see them come in and do a Disney Plus series.
Yeah, I would too. And I hope that, you know, Disney figures something out.
Schwartz also went on in this interview to kind of talk a little bit more about the role of producers in the MCU. And depending on the studio, sometimes producers have a bigger role. Some will have a much more minor role. a lot of times, you know, you see movies and there's like a gazillion producers. So exactly who's doing what? And there really is no standard in a lot of ways. I mean, smaller productions, a producer is kind of they're kind of a bigger deal. They're doing more. They're involved in more bigger productions. Yeah, you're going to have one producer that is very much focused on the money end of things. You're going to have another producer that's focused on distribution. You're going to have another that's focused on marketing. You're going to have others that are simply, they're listed as producers because they're financing it. You know, so they give them some say and some input and some production credit. What he says here, he says, there has been a longstanding tradition at Marvel Studios of our process, which more or less is that there's a number of creative producers like myself, and we oversee one movie or now a streaming series from beginning to end. On a movie like Shang-Chi, that means we decide to do it. We set a target release date. I get a stack of comics, and I have to do everything it takes to make that movie. I have to understand what gets everyone excited about the project. Why are we choosing these characters? What story do we want to tell? I talk to writers, directors. I put a crew together. I prep the movie, shoot the movie, post the movie, market and distribute the movie. That all takes about 2.5 years to do. So, you know, pretty much a soup to nuts thing, and very, very hands on.
Mm-hmm. And you think about putting it that way, 2.5 years of, and we know some of the things that are coming out in 2 to 3 years. I hear that and I get so excited, because if it takes 2.5 years from that moment, how much crap does Feige have on post-it notes that he's just waiting for? Okay, November, these three come down, go. Yeah. And I mean, because if that's 2.5 years from there, tack on how long Feige and others have been thinking about this and moving those chess pieces.
Yeah.
So that the movies come out in the order they need them to. Yes. Are there occasional ones where like, ooh, should have done that one maybe a year earlier? Oh, well.
Sure. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But just the sheer amount that we have yet to know about is just makes me, as a kid who got a Star Wars or maybe a superhero-ish movie once every 3 years, because they're like, oh, that one did good, we should make another one. Just remain giddy at that of just getting so much content.
Yeah, and I mean, it's go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just saying, and it's not just in theaters, like they have the TV shows too. So it's, you have something coming out Marvel related almost every month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
And then there's even more things to align with that. I was just looking at the schedule, and the latest confirmed film date that we have is with a name associated to it is Guardians 3. And that's in May of 2023. And we know, I mean, basically, James Gunn has already written it. So, you know, that 2.5 years was kind of elongated, but I think it can also be compressed because he's already written it. Granted, it's going to go through some other, you know, some edits and rewrites and that kind of stuff. But that's fundamentally done. The main casting is fundamentally done. So, you know, because it is a sequel. So there are certain things that they're going to be able to kind of shortcut because the stuff is already there. But still, that's the latest film that we know of. I mean, we think there's going to be some other things that are going to come out after that, like, you know, Fantastic Four, X-Men, Deadpool 3, whatever else, but nothing's been confirmed for us yet. And it really does make you think about exactly what John said. What are those post-it notes on Kevin Feige's desk or on a wall in his office where he just has, like, year for year, here's all the movies that he has planned out, or all the major, you know, characters that he wants put out there. It's just kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah. And just exciting too. Like, you're like, when, because they have all the way up until 2023, and then before you know it, it's going to be 2023. We'll have all those movies. And you're like, what else is, how long is this going to keep going? Which I'm not complaining about. I'm very excited about.
Forever.
Which I hope it's forever, because there's so many stories to tell and so many different groups of people who aren't included in the comic books or the movies yet. And they can be.
When we look at things like Star Wars, Star Trek, Jurassic Park, these are franchises that have gone on for not quite a lifetime, but decades. And it's amazing the amount of content that they've put out there with these, and how prolific these stories are. And even if in some cases, like with Star Trek, you know, they've gone into different timelines, they've created different series, which sometimes relate, sometimes don't. That's fine. I'm fine with them doing that in Marvel. You know, keep throwing stuff at us. And of course, I also want to see this, like, evolution of, like, special effects. And, you know, if there's something that they can't pull off now, which I can't even imagine what they can't do now. I mean, that's got to be a really short list of things. 10, 15 years from now, imagine what they can do.
Just look at the difference between the first Iron Man, you know, and through. I mean, in that 10 years, how much the technology has shifted. So, 100, yeah. I mean, it's... And we've seen how it's impacted on TV shows, most notably, and again, I think it was the first place we were all at least aware of it, things like on The Mandalorian and the set, as opposed to just being a green screen, being like the digital screen. So the actors and actresses could actually see where they were, as opposed to acting in front of a green screen, and how much that changed things.
Totally.
You know, and the great thing is they're going to keep pushing that envelope, because they know the fans want it. They know they can. And it only creates better content for all of us.
Yeah. And they're going to keep making money off of it.
Hell yeah.
Let's see. The last bit of news that we have here. A couple weeks ago, we had announced that Venom, the sequel, Let There Be Carnage, was moved to October 15th. Guess what? It's moving again. It's not going to be moved later, though. They're moving it earlier, which is really weird, because, like, they have to, like, amp things up with movie theaters and other stuff. So it's kind of weird. They're moving up to October 1st. So
when was this announced?
Like, yesterday.
Okay. I'm just wondering if
they're riding the Shang-Chi wave,
or they saw that and they're like, well, hell yeah. Like, you know, movies are back, baby.
Yeah. If they can do it, we can do it too.
Yeah.
So folks, that is it. That's all we have for this week. Thanks, everybody. Catch you next week. Bye-bye.